Okay, good morning. We're on page 357, which deals with a very interesting topic that I think is worthwhile examining because there's a fundamental principle here that's coming to highlight that will be appreciated once we see certain makoros. So, what's interesting is that the question we have to ask ourselves, what is the Torah's view on charity? And the article here questions and says, how are we supposed to understand a welfare state? So take a look. That Wikipedia defines a welfare state as the following, quote, a form of government in which the state protects and promotes the economic and social well-being of the citizens based upon the principles of equal opportunity, equitable distribution of wealth, and public responsibility for citizens unable to avail themselves of the minimal provisions for a good life. So, the Rav Elazar Melamed explains the ideology behind the welfare state, quote, according to their conception of society, every human has a natural right to live in relative comfort, as defined by the society. It is his right to demand that society provide him with that which most of the other people in the society have. Society doesn't fulfill its duty, then it is they who are responsible for inequality and it must be ashamed by this. For wealth is communal, and therefore when there are people in the society who live with more wealth than others, they're considered as if they are exploiting the poor and living at their expense. Wow. So, okay. 2 points, things that he wanted to highlight here. One, if you turn the page, it is seen as legitimate that those who create wealth and have wealth ought to provide for those who have less, right? That's the principle. The second is a logical outcropping of society based on destroying inequality is that equitable distribution of wealth has become the state's responsibility, rather than any particular individual, right? So, the question is that how are you supposed to understand that from a Torah perspective, okay? So that one, when we want to talk about that the society needs to provide for others, and two, the focus is on the society to assist, right? Much more than an individual. To put that on the side, Let's take a look. What is the obligation of giving tzedakah? So this we saw before. Kipasoach tiftach es yadcha lo, havet tavitenu de machsaro, asher yachsar lo. So, what does this mean? Right? Open hand, and you shall lend him sufficient for his need, which is lacking. So this is mitzvah tzedakah, says the Rambam. Mitzvah of number, 195, right? That we have to give tzedakah to support people who are, you know, who are in need. So this mitzvah is essentially trying to really highlight for us, so what do we need to do? Help those essentially who are in need. You know, right? That's like the basic fundamental understanding of it, right? Support the downtrodden in the society. So how does that work? So number one, Who does one give the tzedakah to, right? So the Sifri, just jump down to the Sifri. Good morning. Ki hiye b'cha v'lo b'achirim, right? Evyon te'ev te'ev kodem. So we see that there's a, number one, the person who's the most needy takes precedence, right? That's number one. Whoever's most needy takes precedence. Then it says, achicha ze'achecha ma'avicha hu amir ma'achecha achecha melamed she'achecha. So again, that your father's family side comes first. And when it comes to priority, people who live in your city take priority over those people who live in a different city. Ba'aretzcha, yoshvei ha'aretz. Those people who live in the land, kodmin yoshvei chutz'aretz. The people that take precedence over individuals who live outside the city. Shomer be'echad sharecha, haya yoshev b'makom echad ata mitzavah lefarnas aso. Haya nachzar al-pesachim iata zakuk lo l'chol davar. So if a person lives in your place, you're obviously, that would be obligated to support. But what about if someone's coming from out of town, and they're coming from out of town, and they're knocking on the door? So I'm from out of town, I'm coming to Toronto, so I know Toronto is a very generous place. You wouldn't have the same obligation to provide support. You got to provide your local inhabitants first, not people from out of town who come visit. Again, the last line is, wherever they may be found. So again, what we're talking here is, how are we supposed to understand, there's a concept today in modern society called the welfare state, where the state essentially takes responsibility, where the state says, listen, there are many people who have a lot of money, and you know what we need to do? We need to take their money, we need to give it to other people. So a welfare state has these two components to it. The people need to, and the responsibility of the state to ensure that happens. So the question we want to ask ourselves today is, how are you supposed to end that from a core perspective? And I think this is a fundamental principle, when a major difference, a philosophy of Torah giving versus, as you'll see by the conclusion, a separate understanding of a welfare state. We started, again, just to review quickly, we started that the basic fundamental principle of giving tzedakah lies on the person, right? If you take a look at that pasuk on page 358, you open up your hand to give, right? That's the obligation. And the obligation, right? And who you have to give obligation to giving? People who live locally who are in greater need. Okay. Right? And of course, by the way, who you're responsible to give first? Yourself, right? I mean, you think these concentric circles that we have, my concentric circle is me. And then it's my immediate family, and then it's my family members, and then it would be my people, my community, right? It starts off with local tzedakah first, and closest to me. Now, go down to 359, that last paragraph, if we pause. If you pause and evaluate our thesis in the light of these concentric circles, we see that rather than a welfare state allowing us to hold the mitzvah of tzedakah in a more productive way, a welfare state actually destroys the vision of personal responsibility in which one has to look out for his fellow. Why? Because if one can outsource one's tzedakah need to the central government, then one's personal sensitivity towards those who are fortunate dwindles. Meaning, if we say, I don't have to deal with it, let the government deal with it. Right? That, my friends, is antithetical to Torah values. We don't contract our tzedakah to a government, right? Rather, we have to take our personal responsibility, and that's this paragraph on 359. One places the financial responsibility for the poor on his relatives and neighborhoods and will attempt with all their ability to find him a job. So he'll be able to earn a living by himself. It won't be a constant burden. And through this, they will help him to get back on his feet. However, when the poor person receives a stipend from the government, his relatives relieve themselves of any responsibility and don't make enough of an effort to ensure that he will work or earn a living, right? If a person is on welfare, so what ends up happening is, what do the relatives say? I'm exempt. I have to help him out. Why don't they help out my relative? Because the government will take care of it. The damage this causes is deep and lasting. For many circumstances, once the poor person becomes accustomed to the stipends and charity, he loses his honor and ability to stand on his own two feet. He becomes a bad example for children, and the chances that they will succeed in getting out of the circle of poverty diminishes. Okay? So the idea, so not even contracting, this idea that I think the government will be able to provide welfare and to assist, that is not necessary. That almost removes your family's responsibility to help you. And that's essentially what it's all about. The family should take responsibility, because the family takes responsibility, guess what? They'll also take responsibility, not just to give you money, but hopefully to get you back on your own two feet. By contracting it out, you don't have that at all. Sorry?
Taxes then don't become tzedakah.
So then, right, so not a lot of taxes are at stake. I'm not saying, you know, you can argue that a small percentage of maybe of your taxes are going to the stake, but the most tax in Canada goes towards
roads.
No. Goes towards medical, healthcare, right? So a lot of healthcare actually goes towards Narishkeit. That's a problem with healthcare. Nah. It's not the most efficient system, as we all know. You know, I mean, listen, better than nothing, but healthcare has major challenges. That, you know, most of the, okay, it's off topic. Most money in healthcare has to go towards, especially in America, has to go towards doctors and insurance that they don't get sued, and liability insurance. Tremendous amount of money has to go towards liability insurance, because if they get sued for $25 million, they're going to be protected. So the whole system is inefficient. Okay. The next, as an outgrowth of this, is also a very important idea, is what's the definition of a poor person? And you'll see why this is fascinating, because the question is, how do we apply it in the modern society? So take a look at this. Who's allowed to take from tzedakah? It's a mishnah in Peah. Ein poskin la'ani ha'over mimakom la'makom mekikar pefundion ma'arba'ah se'in b'selah. So let's say there's a poor person, right? Let's say there's a poor guy, and he's traveling around, and the Mishnah says you should not give to a person less than a loaf, right? Which is essentially the cost of it's, which is four sela, right? Don't give a person less than that. You know, traveling around looking for food, okay? Don't give them less than that. No sinu parnasa leina, and you should give though also something money in order to sleep. Shavas is no mazon shalosh sudas for Shabbos. You gotta give someone needs food, and then you feel for Shabbos. How many meals you have to give them?
Three.
Of course, you gotta give them three. No, did I skip that? Mishi yeshlo mazon shtei sudas. But what about if you have food for two? Okay, you're not allowed to take mina tamchoy. You're not allowed to take from what's called this public funds, I guess, right? Mazon arba asar sudos loyto mina kupa, the kupa nigves v'shonim mischalakes v'shlosha. Okay, let me explain what this means. There were two types of charities that existed in the times of the Mishnah. There was what's called a tamchoy, and a tamchoy was a place. So again, a person who has enough for two meals. Let's say I have enough for two meals. You're not allowed to take from a tamchoy. And generally speaking, a tamchoy in modern terminology we call it the soup kitchen. So if you have enough, remember there's no refrigeration these days. Although I guess outside you don't really need refrigeration. But when you have enough for two meals, you'd not be allowed to take from the local soup kitchen. And if you had enough for 14 meals, which essentially was 2 weeks worth of food, by the way, people only ate two meals a day, right? Shabbos is the exception, or three meals a day, right? So if you have enough for 2 weeks worth of food, if that's the situation, you're not allowed to take from what's called the kupa. The kupa is this weekly charity that existed, okay?
So it's basically tamche.
Right, okay, so that's this kind of that's where tamche Shabbos comes from, okay? So you have two different, you have what's called the tamchui, which is the soup kitchen, which literally you eat now, right? I don't have food for today. And if you have two meals, you can't take from there. If you can eat today, you can't take from the soup kitchen, right? But if you don't have enough for 2 weeks worth of food, then you'd be allowed to take from this different fund, which is called the kupa. Okay? Now, it was two people would collect the money, and three people would distribute the money. That's what this Mishnah says. Okay. Next. The next stage, if you want, the next definition of someone who's poor is things, what's called matarosanim. So like leket in those things. So Mishnah has. If you have 200 zoos, by the way, what is 200 zoos? I'm going to have to define in a second. But for now, we're going to assume 200 zoos. Lo yito leket shichel peo maser sheni. You're not allowed to take what's called matnos anim. Right? If you have 200 minus 1, so 200 zuz, but let's say you have 1 dinar less, afilu elef nosnin lo ke'echas hare ze yito. Okay? Meaning, the guy has basically 199.5, I think, that's what it equals to. I'm not so sure, 199, whatever it is, just under 200. The moment you have that, if 1,000 people walk over to you and say, here's another zuz, here's another dinar, you're allowed to accept every single one from them. The moment you're under that 200 zuz amount. Okay? So, let's say, what did a person do? A person borrowed money. Why he borrowed money? Let's say you have a mashkan by a baal chov. Let's say you took out a loan, right? You took out a loan for a wedding, right? You have a mashkan. Why? You did it for a wedding. You did it for the ksuba. Then also you'd be allowed to, we don't tell, you're also allowed to take charity. So do we say, listen, you live in a house and you have two tables. Well, take a table, sell it so that you have 200 zuz. No. We don't look at your things in your house. When we calculate 200 zuz, we look at your bank account. How much money do you have? Do you have 200 zuz in your bank account? We don't look at your house, meaning everyone's entitled to a basic necessities and living quarters. We do not say, sell your house, you live on the street. We don't say that at all. We say, if you have less than 200 zuz in your bank account, even if you live in a house, then you're considered to be able to accept from the kupa. No, from the kupa. Okay? Kupa or temple?
I'm talking about like...
Sorry. Right, exactly. You also said that thank you, right? Okay, fine. Thank you. Okay, so here we go. Look at 360. The Mishnah outlined three basic categories of people. Okay, so number one, there's a person who's not starving, but doesn't have a lot of money. That person can take, laget, shechicha, and peah, but cannot take more direct forms of tzedakah, like from the tamchoi or from the kupa. The second is, I don't have enough food to last for the week. I only have, right? Sorry, 14 meals means it's 1 week worth of food. This person can take from what's called general tzedakah from the kupa. The third is what we call a person who's destitute. Right? He doesn't have enough money for one day. He doesn't have two meals. That person can take what's called from the soup kitchen in the local community. Okay? Now, generally speaking, we seem to highlight just liquid assets. Now, that being said, the Gemara says the following. We're not obligated to sell things. But that's not so simple, because take a look at the second line there in the Gemara on 360. Hayah mishtamesh b'kli zahav. Let's say the guy has no money in his bank account. But what is he using? He's using gold plates. Yishtamesh b'kli kesef. Use silver ones. B'kli kesef, yishtamesh b'nechoshes. If he has silver ones, use copper. Amar Rav Zev in lakasha. Ha b'mita b'shulchan. So I don't understand. Do we obligate the guy to sell his stuff or not? In one place it says you should sell your stuff. You should lower your gold to your silver to your copper. And another place it says we don't sell your assets that you have in order to be able to eat. We don't say that. How do we resolve this contradiction? It's very simple. We're talking about two different things. One, we're talking about literally a bed and a table. And the other is talking to cups and bowls. What's the difference? Maishna, kosos, vikaros, delo. The Amar Masili Mita Veshochan Nami Amarlo Mekabel Alui. Right? Very simple. When it comes to how come we don't say you should sell your bed and your table? How can we just say we should sell your plates? The answer is very simple. What are we dealing with here? We're talking about something which is made out of silver. Right? What are we talking about? And this is his answer, Marava Bimachrisha de Kaspa. That we're talking about something made out of silver. Meaning, Amar Rav Papa, Amar Lo Kasha, Kan Kodem Shevo Lide Giboy, Kan Lachar Shevo Lide Giboy. So, there's a, you know, We only take a look at, he explains it over here. The Gemara explaining the Mishnah in Peah tells us there are certain categories of items that we do obligate the potential poor person to sell to avoid falling below the poverty line of 200 zuz. Which items are protected and which are not is a dispute among the Rishonim. Rashi explains that one is obligated to sell possessions only when he dishonestly takes from tzedakah. In this case, he can no longer repay the money because he's poor. Then he must sell his possessions to pay back his debt. If he was honestly poor, though, there is no need to sell any possessions. Wow. That's what Rashi understands the Gemara. You do not need to sell any possessions. Tosfos explains, then he moves from the first level of poverty to the second, namely, he is now taking from the weekly kupa, he must sell his things. Tosfos understands that the first level is hefker, charity which is not allocated to a particular person, whereas the public funds from the kupa are only for the truly poverty stricken. The Ritva explains that those items that he owned before he became poor, he needs not sell, but expensive items that were purchased after he became poor must be sold. According to the Ritva, it would be incongruous for one to claim to be poor and buy an expensive smartphone with one's welfare stipend. In such a case, we would not allow the further charity to be given until all luxury items bought after that person became poor were sold. Okay, fine. And look at this. It's unbelievable. My sheet does the work trying to figure it out. Because this Gemara makes no sense, right? You sell, you don't sell a silver cup, right? The Gemara itself seems to be very odd. It seems to be very clear what you need to do, right? When I first read this, I'm like, oh, if you have something of silver, just sell it to get bronze. But the Gemara is not even necessarily just explaining it that way. Okay, the next opinion says, if you had a kiddush cup from gold or silver, then you should sell it for something a little bit cheaper, right? It doesn't matter if you're in the first level or second level. The Rif has a different understanding of the Gemara. It's unbelievable, right? Right. The tour tries to synthesize the opinions. Turn the page, and here's the Shulchan Aruch. Here we go. Page 362. From this entire fascinating discussion about what exactly defines a poor person, it's easy to see that the Torah's wealth shung is one where only people who have the very bare minimum are provided for out of the public coffers. There are those who are in a slightly more well-off position, and these people are allowed to take individual charity up to the minimum poverty line of 200 zuz. Above that, there doesn't seem to be any heter to take charity even from an individual, as the Gemara writes. One who takes charity when it's unnecessary will live to see the day when he needs to take charity to survive. Wow. A person needs to give them what's called de machzaro. Okay? And yet, meaning a person needs to be given something in order to be able to actually function. And the question is, the definition of what you need is a complicated one. Obviously, if a person needs food, he needs to eat. If a person needs clothes, he needs to have clothes. He needs to have some type of possessions in his house in order to have a table and a chair and cups and whatever. And all this, by the way, is decided often by the Gabbai Tzedakah. Right? Go to 363. See, it says the Ramah in 363. All this is incumbent upon a Gabbai Tzedakah of the community. But one person is not obligated to fulfill all the poor person's needs. Rather, the poor should make his pain known to the community. If there's no community, he, the donor, should give as much as he can afford. Okay, I want to show you now, because it's already 6:27, we got to go. I want to show you two things. One, here. Rabbi Akiva says on page 364, you're supposed to look at your... If better to make your Shabbos like a weekday than ask other people to give you food for Shabbos, right? Which is pretty amazing. And then again, just to conclude what we started with, when we talk about a society is very, very different. A society is very, they don't necessarily, we don't look at society, we look at individuals.
Does he think that you eat the same schus? Like if you're eating three meals?
Yeah, so what you do is you take one meal and you divide it into two. Yeah, you have three meals. You can divide it into two. So here, look at this paragraph 367. Again, we see how the state destroys the community cohesion which is so intrinsic to charitable giving. Not only does it not exist in practice in such an environment, but the underlying values that this type of charitable giving espouses fall by the wayside. We have seen through numerous facts of Hilchot Tzedakah how a state-run welfare system seems to run counter to halacha. These concentric circles of responsibility disappear, as do the communal coercion and personal accountability that come with a community-based charity program. Wow. It is a very, very strong... I was actually shocked to see how strong the language was coming from here. In conclusion, we see that really it's about, and this is what I think the important value is, because it's really late, and that is really highlighting that it's about the person's, it's your responsibility to give and feel the pain of somebody else, and you, the person who's receiving it, you need to understand that taking tzedakah is something which should not be ideal. If obviously you need it, you need it, and you need to be very careful, and it is a very clear system. Who can take, how much you can take, what level you are at.
What about grants?
Grants are actually an interesting thing. We'll touch on grants a little bit later. But I think from our perspective, we need to also realize that in the modern world, how do we define 200 zoos? So I didn't really have time to deal with it today, but basically 200 zoos, then what we'd say today is how much you need to live every generation is different, right? Every time and place is different. 200 zoos is... Then, isn't that, say, 200 Jews today? Everyone has the Gabbai Tzedakah and needs to evaluate. Okay, what do you need to live in Thornhill? Right? Here's the basic living expenses in Thornhill. If you earn less than that, that's like 200 Jews. Right? So, okay, we'll stop there for today. We continue. Mr. Hashem, next week. This is a very important topic.